Good morning, sir, and before we get started officially, what is your name, sir?
My name is Henry Emo.
Okay, Mr. Emo. Okay,
Emo.
The Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will be conducting your hearing, sir, so just hold on.
Good morning, sir, can you hear me there?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Sir, just for the record, could you just please state your name, your ABC number for us for the record?
My name is Henry Emo.
Okay.
86747.
Thank you, sir. Sir, you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I'm going to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting your hearing this morning. To my far left is the Honorable Luis Quinones. Coming down the line is the Honorable David Neal. In the middle is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chair. To my immediate left is the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. And my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel chair this morning, sir.
Thank you, sir.
So you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a absolute discharge of parole to your next consecutive sentence, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir. I tell you, I did, and I may be a little bit off, but I was trying to review. You're currently on a 10-year sentence for sexual assault. You became parole eligible on this sentence on September 30th of 2018. You previously served a 14-year sentence and a 10-year sentence that were running concurrent to each other for burglary and sexual assault. Looks like you were paroled to your next sentence in September 13th, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so according to what I'm looking at here, you may have these days a lot better off than what I have, but looks like from my calculation, you're serving a sentence of 650 years, 10 months, and 15 days. Is that about right?
Yes, sir.
And parole to your next consecutive sentence, you will be paroled to a 14-year sentence for sexual assault. So according to your institutional progress report, you haven't taken many classes. It looked like you had three classes. One of them was for cultural diversity in 06. You had an education GED in 2011, and then in 09 you had a conflict resolution. Is that about right? Have you had any more program besides that?
Anonymous, anger management, and victim awareness.
Okay. So, sir, it says if you were released that you were granted parole, you would have unlimited family support. It states that your family would allow you to reside with them upon your release from prison. You have an uncle, James Elam, who operates his own salvage business, has stated that he would allow you to secure an apartment with him. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And I'm looking at your institutional progress report, sir, and it's on your, what it talks about some discipline is that in 2013, you had a discipline for refusal to program as a major. In 2015, you had a refusal to program. 2015, again, or three times in 2015, you had a refusal to program. What was that all about, sir?
I was moved to a private prison in England.
Uh-huh.
And I had this issue with like being able to support my family and not having to ask my family for anything. So I wasn't able to work there, sir. And I wasn't allowed to get a job to where I could properly be able to support myself and send money home to my kids and my grandkids.
Right.
So I would ask if I could come back to the Department of Corrections so that I could get a job. And they said that the only way that I could come back is to refuse to house because of the way the program was set up there. So I chose, I didn't like want to do it, but I had no choice because I don't want to be one more burden on my family than I already am.
Okay, so did you, are you back in, you out of the private prison now?
Yes, sir. I'm back in the custody of Department of Corrections.
And you working?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so it looks like you just had, since you've been incarcerated, it looks like you have only a minimal discipline, that you haven't been in much any trouble. And since, looks like 1997, you had 3 violations for disobeying order, 4 violations for refusing the program, which we just talked about, some of those refusing the program, but you haven't had a lot of violence, that you really haven't been in that much trouble since you've been incarcerated.
Well, sir, I kind of really have to do a lot of self-reflecting and sitting down with myself and being real with myself. And I kind of had to do, change my thoughts and the way that I behave and the way that, and just try to be like a better person. Every morning I wake up, sir, I program myself to know that I'm going to be the best man that I can be for that day. You know what I mean? I have no control over what other people's actions, I only have control over my own actions. And as far as disciplinary goes, you know, when I was younger and I actually came, when I came to prison, I was like 22 years old, which I was a young man. And my chain of thought was I was self-centered, I was selfish. I really couldn't see life from other people's shoes. And I had to do a lot of growing and a lot of maturing. And I just realized that you can't live your life being a fool, and you have to do what's right, even when people ain't looking. And it's not that I'm trying like to give you a speech or nothing, because there's nothing that I can say or anything that I can do to change my past. All I can do is just, like I said, is just be the best person I can be today and focus on today and tomorrow.
Okay. All right, well, so I see that you had a special parole hearing in February of 95. It was not recommended to the governor. And then in September 30th, as I said earlier, of 2013, you were granted parole to your next consecutive sentence. And those are the only 2 hearings that you've actually had before this board. You haven't been before the board on any other hearings.
Yes, sir. Every time that they ask me if I would like to go to the board, I've always said yeah. And this and the previous time is the only times that I was actually offered a chance to go to the board.
Okay. Well, so this, I'm going to go over, this is, you're incarcerated for some incidents that occurred between April 16th, 1998 to June 16th, 1990, over approximately 2-year period, where you were convicted of being involved in, I believe it's 10 sexual assaults that you were tried by jury, found guilty by a jury, that in the course of the investigation, your fingerprints was left at various locations, and entry points are positively identified, and some of them has been the person involved in the actual sexual assault. These sexual assaults occurred all while in Tucson, and some of them you didn't have a weapon, some of them you did use a knife. There was a revolver that was taken from one of the victims as you burglarized that house. You usually stayed in the house for, you know, a good while, hours, and then when you sexually assault these women and forced them to do oral sex on you, then you had sexual intercourse penetration with them, and then you subsequently would leave the house. You tied some of them with various items you may have found inside the house. What was going through your mind during this period of time. So what was going on with you? Can you explain that to me, sir?
So, to be honest with you, my mind and the way that I thought, and I couldn't even comprehend or even go back to revisit any of that as far as what I was thinking or what happened or the whole situation or the scenario. But what I can tell you about the whole thing is my past is like a blur to me, and my dad is down trying to avoid anything or to try to cover up anything. But I'm just being honest with you because it was so long ago.
So you can't recall, sir, what it was that caused you to forcibly enter into somebody's home and sexually assault these women?
So, like I said, I cannot tell you as far as what I was thinking or what happened or any of that, sir, because it was so long. It was so long ago. Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been incarcerated, sir?
So I've been incarcerated 28 years.
Uh-huh. So according to the pre-sentence report, it says that at the time of trial, you didn't think you received a fair trial.
The thing about that is I took into the fact that the day before my trial, they switched attorneys on me. Uh-huh. And the attorney that I had to go to trial with just walked in the courtroom and said, I'll take his case, and didn't know nothing about it. And the next day I went to trial with an attorney that didn't even know anything about my case. And then the no witnesses were called, no evidence was presented, or none of that. But, you know, like I said, this was so long ago, and I'm not making excuses for any of this.
So, sir, when I see, look at your juvenile record, you had a shoplifting in 76 and 80, you were, was incorrigible, where your mother told the police that she couldn't control you. Then in July of 80, you had a simple assault, endangerment, theft of under $100. You and a friend allegedly beat up another youth and stole his bicycle. And in 19 December of 80, you allegedly stole a pack of gum from a local convenience store. And then it's kind of concerning, in April of 1982, you allegedly entered onto the private property on numerous occasions and started fights and used foul language. And then in October of 82, you had a theft and damage to property. You observed the witness crying over the car door at Catalina High School. And then it says in 83 of April, you were hiding in some bushes in the backyard of a residence. According to you, you followed two people to this particular residence because they drove by and yelled for families at you. And then in May of 83, you had a criminal trespassing, and you entered the backyard of a residence after being chased by the police. And I tell you, sir, what's kind of concerning to me is that it almost seemed like you just were involved in an escalation of crimes, from, you know, theft to, you know, hiding out of people's backyard, maybe looking into some windows, to moving on to doing actual burglaries where you actually forcibly entered into the residence and committed sexual assault on several victims. And I know you say you don't recall any of that, but do you recall any of the things when you were a juvenile, sir?
Well, I I vaguely remember some of it. I just don't remember the exact details. I don't want to like age wrong or lie to you, but like I said, it was so long ago. I'm like 51 years old now, sir, and I can't remember what happened in 80 or 82 or nothing exactly. The stuff that you're reading back to me right now, I vividly remember, but I couldn't really kind of give you no details or none of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I just don't want to lie to you or nothing like that.
Well, I appreciate you not with you being honest, sir. I do tell you appreciate it. I do want to say that you do have several letters of support here from your family, your kids, your grandkids, your auntie. Have all wrote in some really nice letters for you, so I do want to acknowledge that you do have those letters and that family support that came in. And in those letters, sir, it also talks about you, you know, trying to help your family and your kids and trying to be there for them. And I guess some of your kids talk to you, I believe it's on Sunday that they get an opportunity to talk to you when you call over to one of the aunties' house. And I just do want to put on the record that you did have some very good letters of support that was coming from your family members, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you at this time. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, I hear you, sir.
First of all, I want to commend you for what you said earlier. It sounds like that you've worked hard to reprogram yourself, and I think that's meaningful. If prison is to be about rehabilitation, there's a note here from the pre-sentencing report that states that when you were interviewed before sentencing, that you were at least viewed as having no remorse for your offense cycle. So,
yes,
were you remorseless back then? And we're talking back then, not now.
Yes, sir, well, back then, I was so self-centered, sir, and so arrogant, and such a fool that I actually said some dumb things and behaved very immature. And it's not that, I would just put it that I was ignorant, sir. I was very ignorant because, like I said, my world was, I didn't really realize or view how big the world was or how, you know what I'm trying to say? So I was just self-centered, and I couldn't see I couldn't look at things from other people's shoes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, in a very general way. And you know, we hear a lot of cases, and I will say just up front, somebody had said recently, there's the business of people feeling remorse of what they've done, but whether or not the acts of philanthropy. And how do you feel now about what your crimes have done to the victims? How do you feel about it?
How do I? So shame, remorse, repentance, all those are understatements. I couldn't actually describe to you how broken my heart is and how bad I feel, because as a man, and now knowing and seeing things and viewing things from a man's aspect, you could never, I can't change, like I said, I can't change my past or my behavior or what's written on that paper. All I can do is wake up every day, like I said before, and try to pour good into other people and try to uplift other people and change my environment or those that are around me. I know it sounds like a bunch of babblish, but I'm kind of nervous, because...
No, I actually think you're being very clear, and I appreciate it. Like my colleague stated, we appreciate that you're being honest with this board and straightforward. I guess my last question is, if around the time you're arrested and incarcerated, you had that arrogance and maybe narrow, I'll say narrow worldview, when do you think you began to change in these last 30 years? Was there something that really caused a turning point for you?
Well, when I would believe that when I turned around 27 years old and the lights kind of came on, and I don't want to say that I became more spiritually in tune to my conduct and the way that I spoke and treated others, and just to try to change all the, or to make up, if it was possible, to make up for the way things turned out. Because like I said, I never really had a chance or a childhood because of all the, my moral compass was so distorted, sir. And I was not able to really develop as a man. So as the time is in prison, or the time that I have been in prison, to reflect was not in vain. It actually saved my life, and I was able to get a grip on everything and to see the error of my ways and be able to correct my sons and to show them that, you know, regardless of what environment they put you in, you have to do right, you gotta be right, and you have to be a man. You know, you have to learn how to serve and how to treat people and respect people and others and their property and whatnot. And I just, like I said, when I turned 27, sir, or whatever, that's kind of when the light grew on. I guess you could say I matured. And so I just basically, ever since then, all I've been doing is educating myself. And like I said, I don't even deal with my entertainment stuff. And people actually, very few people don't like to be around me because I'm so positive, or I try to be so positive. And I just don't like to tolerate with like foolish talk, foolish behavior, and people carrying themselves in a certain way. Like, you know, I tell guys, you know, I'm not trying to disrespect you, but pull your pants up. I got kids their age, and I just outgrown this place, man. Basically, not trying to sound arrogant or disrespectful, but I put everything that I can into my peers and the people that are around me to try to embed them. Some received it, some didn't.
Well, again, thank you for an honest response. And I got to tell you, not to draw this out, but it's really interesting to me, just to me, that you made reference to the age of 27, because I just can't get over what happens with young people in their later 20s. I know the case is extreme, but throughout life, it's interesting how much more evolved people are between the ages of 25 and 30 as opposed to what's going on up to that point. So I'll just say that to kind of at least normalize it a little. And I'll ask my fellow board members if they have any questions. So thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Any more questions? Dr. Rock.
Sir, I don't want to sound negative, but you have, as the Honorable Mr. Johnson indicated, you have over 600 years sentence that you have, that you're scheduled to serve, and I don't want to ask, I'm just going to ask, how are you so positive with all that time, sir? Because you sound like very positive, very intelligent gentleman, and you over the years you put your family first, as you say. That's one reason you ended up with those the major tickets earlier. So how have you become so positive? We just don't see that often. So can you kind of comment on that, sir?
Well, sir, knowledge, I would say that knowledge and understanding for one, but the other part is my faith and my belief. You know, and if it wasn't for my belief in God, I probably would shift to the other side or be consumed by my environment. But because of my faith and my beliefs, I just hang on and just trust in God and believe in God. And I don't even want to step on no one's faith or disrespect anybody, but that's the only thing that keeps me going. And the fact is, my kids and my grandkids, I just try to just do right by them.
May I ask, since you raised that issue about your faith, at what point in time was that, when you were around 27, when you kind of converted to religion, or is that something that, when did that happen? When did you kind of saw that as being your future, sir?
I did. I dabbled in it, and I would say within the last 15 years, I've kind of just, I took it more serious, and I just kind of just dug in with both feet and try to understand and gain knowledge through that.
If you were to reflect, and this will be my last question, as you say that, you know, much of what happened 28, 30 years ago, you don't have a recollection, but not in terms of your criminal background, but in terms of your social background, what type of person were you back at that time? I mean, you committed the crime. You admit that. So what were you all about, sir? If you reflect on your life when you were much younger, sir.
Well, sir, to be honest with you, I didn't know anything about life back then, and like I said, my world consists of a 4-mile radius, and I didn't know anything about life or anything, and I was very immature, and I just made bad choices, and I just, you know, sometimes when we grow up and the only people around you are negative, or the stuff that is being installed in you is wrong and distorted, you kind of pick up on those things, and then you become like arrogant, and then you become like one of those people, and you become like, I'll put it in lamest term, you become a star in your own movie, and it's not reality.
So that you put it quite well, and I'm commend you for your process, your thinking process at this time, and wish you the best, and thanks so much, and thanks. From my perspective, thanks so much for your being positive towards your family and towards the people, towards others who were institutionalized there where you were at this particular time. I think that you offered so much, you know, as a family person as well as a community person. And when I say community, I mean within the prison system itself. So thanks again, and thank you so much, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, any more questions? Okay. So, saying no other questions coming from the board, Mr. Williams, we're about to come up on the conclusion of your hearing, sir. As we come up on the conclusion of your hearing, I want to give you the opportunity to see if there's anything else you'd like to say to the board without repeating yourself, sir.
That pretty much sums it up, sir. I'm sorry that you guys had to come down under these circumstances, and also that I would like to not just speak for myself, but to speak for others and reflect that and change and do life. You guys being in a position, in a position of authority that you guys are under, you guys are going to run across a lot of people, some that has made change, and some has embedded themselves, and some of them who thinks that this is a game that can never get out the web that they're in. But I would just like for the board to be able to remember that as young people, we all make mistakes, and we all do things that we can never change or think. But I would like for the board members, not to try to tell you how to do your job or whatever, but please just remember that, sir.
Mr. Elam, before the board goes into discussing, let me just, first of all, commend you for being honest, but then the other thing is, sir, I also want to inform you that, so you owe this board no apology. That is by law, the right that you have by law, sir, to come before this board, and it's our responsibility as appointees to these positions to hear these hearings and have these hearings. So you owe us no apology. It's not a waste of our time. It's an obligation that we have to do it, and it's something that's, you know, afforded you a right by law that you have the right to appear and come before this board, sir. So I just want to let you know that you owe us no apology. We're only doing what we're charged to do in our job, so I do appreciate you. So the board's going to go into discussion. While we're in discussion, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line. You can hear the discussion taking place between the board. And then I'm also, when we finish, we'll get back to you with what the conclusion of our discussion was and what we as a board has decided, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. So the board is now going into discussion. We've had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Elam. Mr. Elam has over 600 years left that I can make up. Those numbers could be off a little bit, but over 600 years that I could make out. He has over 44 consecutive sentences still to serve, with some for 14 years, some for 21 years, 15 years, 10 years, with a couple for like a year and a half or a year and some months that he would have to do on his sentence. I think that Mr. Elam has been positive while he's incarcerated. He does have, for being in prison 28 years, very minimal tickets that he's received since being incarcerated. I think that Mr. Elam has earned the right to be moved to his next consecutive sentence based on all of the time that he does have to serve. So that is my opinion at this time, that Mr. Elam should be moved to his next consecutive sentence, which would be a 14-year sentence that he would be moving on to for sexual assault. I'm willing to listen to the rest of the board. Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I agree with you. I think Mr. Elam is a very sincere person, and if he had been the person back then that he is now, we wouldn't even be here. I appreciate that he puts his family ahead of everything else, that he works even in prison and sends money home to his family rather than the other way around, because many families send money in to prison. And he's very conscious of not wanting to be a burden on his family, he said, any more than I already am. And he also said something else that really impressed me, and that is he's teaching his children and his grandchildren and possibly even other inmates to do what's right even when people aren't looking. And that's just the way you need to be in life. And I think he's realized that, and he's had a lot of insight into his own, what makes him himself. The thing he does not seem to have a lot of insight or is not able to talk about is what happened back then. But based on what I'm hearing today, I would also recommend that we pull him as an encouragement. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Quinones.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Johnson. I think what I'm going to say is probably similar to what's already been said by both of you, but I have to say, considering his offense cycle and what he's confronted with in terms of incarceration, I'll be careful because we look at each of these cases individually, but this is certainly one of the most evolved people that I've seen inside the prison system regarding his rehabilitation journey, and I agree that for that consecutive sentence, but please, you know, don't let me sound dismissive of the seriousness of the crime or the victims, but he certainly put a lot of effort into his rehabilitation, and I do recognize that as one voting for him. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no more questions coming from the board, I'm going to make a motion to grant Mr. Elam parole to his next consecutive sentence, which would be a 14-year, it would be a 14-year sentence for sexual assault that he would be moved to, and I'm going to move to deny Mr. Elam absolute discharge.
Second.
Agree.
I'm also going to move for one. Well, he wouldn't be eligible to come back before this board in 1 year, so that's still mark a 1 year set off.
Yeah, it would be a while because this wouldn't be effective till September.
Right.
Yeah, so I think we just leave that.
Leave it blank?
Yeah, leave that blank.
And then we'll
recertify him at an appropriate time, sir.
And I'm also going to mark that for moving to his next and second sentence that he has to abide by institution rules, partake in an available program if it's available, and refrain from disciplinary infractions as part of his full charge duty. That will be the most, unless the board has anything else that they would like to see. Okay, Mr. Elam?
Sir.
So the board is voting to grant you parole to your next consecutive sentence, okay?
Yes, sir.
As part of moving to your next consecutive sentence, the board is also saying that you have to abide by institutional rules, partake in available programming if available, and refrain from any disciplinary infractions, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, sir. Mr. Elam, I want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity for appearing before this board, sir. That is going to conclude your hearing at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you be kind enough to put the seals